Let's do a little thought experiment. Say you're in San Francisco and you've hopped on board one of their iconic trolley cars. It's making its way up one of the city's very steep hills. Now it's reached the top and you're on your way down an equally steep hill. Suddenly, the brakes give away and your runaway trolley is headed straight for a group of unsuspecting tourists. You happen to be standing right next to the lever that switches tracks. You can switch to a secondary track, but further down that one, you notice there's a person standing right on the track. You need to make a split-second decision. Do you pull the lever so that the trolley switches tracks, but that will mean you'd end up endangering that person? Or do you do nothing, knowing that the trolley will hit the tourists on the main track? What I've just described to you is a philosophical problem called the trolley dilemma. It may seem like a weird thing to consider, but it's actually something that everyone involved in the car industry, from manufacturers to engineers to government, is grappling with right now as we get closer and closer to the realization of self-driving cars. Welcome to The Future According to Now, a podcast from Fidelity Investments and Atlantic Rethink, the branded content studio at The Atlantic. We've been exploring the groundbreaking innovations that hold real potential to change our lives in the foreseeable future. In this episode, we're looking into the human implications surrounding coming technology, even as that technology advances at warp speed.
Self-driving cars are the biggest, most visible, near-term consequence of all the advances that we are making in artificial intelligence for our daily lives.
That's Gavin Baker from Fidelity Investments. We'll hear from him later in this episode. At some point this year, a self-driving Tesla will drive across the country from LA to New York, and the person sitting in the driver's seat will be more like a passenger than a driver. They might even get to watch a movie, admire the scenery, check email. Tesla is just one of many car companies and startups with ambitious plans to put its autonomous vehicles on the road. But before this is possible, these companies need to make a decision based on the trolley dilemma.
So the person has to decide, well, what is the ethical thing for the car to do? And would they buy a car which is programmed to do one or the other thing? And so what we find is that people are in pretty good agreement about what the ethical thing is to do, which is be utilitarian. If there's a chance to save five lives by sacrificing one person, even if it's the passenger, that's the ethical thing to do.
Azim Sharif is an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Oregon. He co-authored the study, The Social Dilemma of Autonomous Vehicles.
The majority of people said that was the ethical thing to do, but the kicker was that nobody actually wanted to buy the car. Instead, when they were going to be the actual passenger in the car, they would want to buy a car that would be self-protective. They don't want to be the ones who are potentially sacrificed by a car in order to save other people.
It's all about public perception, how people perceive things to be true. The more you scare people, the less they trust these cars and the more unlikely they are to buy them. It doesn't help that the media can overblow the issue by their coverage of it.
That's right. So when there was that Tesla accident, which I believe Tesla was cleared of all wrongdoing in, and it was a massive news story, right? So there was more attention paid to that one accident than there was to all the other car accidents by human drivers in America combined, which is totally disproportionate since of course, many people are dying every day from human-driven cars.
Disproportionate, sure, but we still need to work on changing this misconception.
There's this sense in people's minds, even really very intelligent, well-informed people, that engineers are programming these cars to drive down the road and make moral decisions about who lives and who dies. That's more like the plot of Stephen King's novel Christine than what actually happens in automated vehicles.
The Center for Automotive Research at Stanford University has been studying self-driving cars for more than 25 years. Director Chris Gerdes is determined to make them safer than even the very best human drivers. To measure and prove that level of safety, his group compared the performance of these cars with actual Indy car drivers like J.R. Hildebrand.
we learned that JRR was actually controlling the car in a very different way than we were. We were very focused on finding the best path in the world and then trying to drive the car reasonably fast around that. Whereas JR is very good at sensing the physical limits of the car and taking whatever path opens up when he does. The way that he put it was, if he had been coaching our robotic car like a human driver, he would say that she had her priorities exactly backwards. Focused first on the path and then the capabilities of the car, whereas a race car driver would focus on the car and then take the path that's available. And so that difference is something that's really quite fundamental, and we think as we're able to translate that into algorithms and AI, that we can make cars that are even much safer than the experiments that we were running merely a year or two ago.
The way Chris sees it, we have different objectives when we drive. We want to be safe, but we also value mobility. And sometimes these things come into tension. One time, a researcher was following one of the self-driving cars being tested.
They were getting frustrated following the vehicle, which seemed to stop for no reason. And as they sort of went to go past the vehicle in great annoyance, realized that a child had fallen off of a bicycle next to the street at the side of the road, and they had completely missed them in the darkness. And they thought, wait a minute, if that had not been the automated vehicle stopping, but had been me, would I have actually seen the child fallen from the bike?
Striking that balance between our biases and reality will take time. This isn't the first time improvements to driver safety met with fear.
It's funny. There used to be a lot of people who believed that it was, quote, dangerous to wear a seatbelt in a car, because what happened if you got in a wreck and you couldn't get out of the car? And then there were people who were worried that airbags were unsafe, because if they went off inadvertently, they could damage a passenger. You know, and those were like real serious concerns.
Gavin Baker is a portfolio manager of Fidelity Investments. It'll be hard to argue against self-driving cars for long, he says, especially when its benefits are quantified.
There will be a vast amount of data on this, and we will be able to track accidents per 100,000 miles, million miles. The data will be dispositive and will eventually guide, you know, society and governments and individuals to the right places. And if we can save hundreds of thousands of lives, I think that that is a good thing for humanity and the world. On top of that, self-driving cars mean that we will be able to largely eliminate traffic. We will be able to eliminate parking lots from cities. It is going to really alter the fundamental landscape of urban areas all over the world, I think, in a very positive way.
Gavin feels the evidence is overwhelmingly in favor of self-driving cars being safer and more ethical.
I think it is highly likely that in the next 50 years, our grandchildren will say to us, wow, were people really allowed to drive cars? People who get angry, who sometimes drive under the influence of illegal substances, who sometimes text while they're driving, who are distracted while they're driving, who, you know, sing loudly while they're driving sometimes, who look out the window and, you know, rubberneck when there's an accident. People with all of those flaws were really allowed to drive machines that weighed 4,000 pounds and could go 100 miles an hour? How was that ever allowed?
For Gavin Baker, Chris Gerdes, and Azeem Sharif, the trolley dilemma is just a small bump in the road, a road that will soon be filled with autonomous vehicles of all shapes and sizes. And if you're feeling nostalgic for your old driving days, Gavin has a solution.
I think in the future, it is possible that if you want to drive at all as a human being, you may have to go to some sort of driving preserve where you have to sign a waiver if you want to go. That I understand I'm entering an area where actual real human beings are driving cars.
The Future According to Now is a podcast from Fidelity Investments and Atlantic Rethink, the branded content studio at The Atlantic. To learn more or to get in touch, visit us at theatlantic.com/fidelitypodcast. Listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Next time, what it's like to live in a smart city. Thank you for listening. Promotional content produced by Atlantic Rethink, the branded content studio at The Atlantic for Fidelity Investments. Fidelity and Atlantic Rethink, the branded content studio at The Atlantic, are independent entities. The views and opinions expressed by the speakers are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of Fidelity or its affiliates. Information presented is for information purposes only and is not investment advice or an offer of any particular security. This information must not be relied upon in making any investment decision. Fidelity cannot be held responsible for any type of loss incurred by applying any of the information presented. These views must not be relied upon as an indication of trading intent of any Fidelity fund or Fidelity advisor. Fidelity and the Fidelity Investments and Pyramid Design logo are registered service marks of FMR LLC, copyright 2016. All rights reserved. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.